Do you see a lot of movies in the theater? Want to see even more? MoviePass is here to help. MoviePass allows you to see an unlimited amount of movies in the theater for one low fixed price. It is accepted at all major theater chains such as AMC and Regal Theaters, not to mention smaller theaters as well. Here in Chicago, it's accepted at the Music Box, Gene Siskel Film Center, and the New 400. Even better, CinemaJaw listeners can try it out for free for 2 weeks. Simply go to our website, cinemajaw.com, and click on the MoviePass ad in the upper right corner. If you love movies and want to save money, MoviePass is for you. So go to cinemajaw.com and try it out for free. And we thank them for their support of CinemaJaw. You're listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the Original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Payne. With me is
Ryan, the movie guy. And this week on CinemaJaw, Matt, we hit the indie circuit. We hit the festival circuit as we cover our top three favorite festival darlings.
This is great. A lot of movies sort of get their start and the buzz starts really slowly and it builds and it builds. And they come from these festivals, which I wish I can get out to more of them.
I can't wait until CinemaJaw gets bigger. And we're actually sending ourselves out to Sundance, Tribeca, Toronto. That would be awesome, wouldn't
South
it?
By Southwest.
Yeah. We are covering this topic because, A, gave a review last week of Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which is catching a bunch of momentum after Sundance this year.
Yeah.
And also because we have a great guest that's going to be joining us a little bit later. His name is Jordan Hodges. And he is the director of the River Bend Film Festival here in the Midwest.
Sweet.
He's also an actor, and he actually relocated from Indiana, his hometown,
yeah,
out to Los Angeles.
Yeah, did a stint in Chicago, I believe, too.
Yeah, stay a little while. Yeah. We'll talk to him. And he has a film that I believe is getting ready to come out or sign some type of distribution deal. I can't remember. It is entitled Sandcastles, and we'll talk to Jordan all about it.
Yep, can't wait to talk to him.
In addition to that, we go eye for an eye this week on a new Pixar movie, Inside Out.
Okay.
Have you seen the previews for this
one? I have seen the previews, yes.
We have a theater.
Looks like Osmosis Jones.
We have a theater review of Spy, and we both got out and caught this, and I'm very interested to hear what you have to say.
As am I of you.
Because 2 weeks ago, when we went eye for an eye on Spy, all three of us on the show gave it an ignore.
The triple ignore.
Yes.
And yet we all went and saw it.
If that wasn't enough, Matt, we have trivia. Everybody loves trivia. Pixar movie trivia honor of their latest film, Inside Out, coming out. Pixar movie trivia.
Cool.
Pretty awesome. And then also, it was funny, I was looking at sort of the box office numbers coming in.
Oh, yeah?
And I can't believe what a flop Aloha, Cameron Crowe's latest movie, turned out to be. And so I thought, at one point, I want to bring up to you and the Jawheads, that I think, I'm going on record, Cameron Crowe is finished.
What?
Yeah, he has nothing left in the tank.
Oh, you got to be kidding me, man.
No.
He's Cameron Crowe.
I'm making the announcement. He's done.
Jerry Maguire and...
That was a great time for him, but I don't think he has anything left.
Cinema War.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You took the bait, did you?
I took the bait, yes.
All right. Jordan's going to have his hands full with that. As always, it is jam-packed here on CinemaJaw.
Jam-packed jaw.
So without further ado, we have our first segment. It is called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Sorrentos.
Tell me more.
Sorrentos has just released his new music video called I Sing, and we will have the link at the top of our show notes. Sorrentos' unique sound has been described by industry insiders as an emotionally powerful vocal style, masterfully united with music that is a fusion of classic 80s rock blended with a modern soft rock and pop music. You can check out his latest music video on his YouTube channel at youtube.com/user/Sorrentos Melogia or at his website, melogia.com. That's MELOGIA.com. And we thank him for his support.
Eye for an Eye this week, Matt, Inside Out. After young Riley is uprooted from her Midwest life and moved to San Francisco, her emotions, joy, fear, anger, disgust, and sadness conflict on how best to navigate a new city, house, and school. The film stars Amy Poehler, Bill Hader, and Diane Lane. Matt, interested or ignore on Inside Out?
It looks so stupid, man. I mean, it really does. I guess I'm going to have to say ignore. This is the first Pixar film I've ever said ignore about.
It's interesting that you say that because I've seen the previews and actually some early reviews now are piling in.
I hope
and,
they're good.
And they're really good. But oh, good. It, that has not stirred me. I couldn't agree with you more. I think it looks so dumb. I don't want the emotions inside the person. It's like they're...
That's been done. Isn't new.
And it's like it reminds me of like... Pixar looking for to pull on the heartstrings. Oh, look at, I don't know. I'm done with it. Ignore.
I think they did that on the Brady Bunch once. You know, there was a whole sitcom where they had the characters inside the guy's head. Herman's head. Remember?
Herman's head.
Yeah. I mean, this is not new territory. This is not new ground they're breaking.
And I actually don't like the animation, those big eyes and the characters.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know it's geared towards kids, but there's something like freaky about the characters. I'm not looking forward to this one.
It's kind of out of character for Pixar. This movie just doesn't feel like a Pixar movie. It feels like a crappy DreamWorks picture.
And don't say crappy DreamWorks.
A crappy one.
Oh, not crappy. All right. Yeah. Not How to Train Your Dragon.
No, okay. They've put out some duds, too.
Yeah, no doubt. If the reviews come in positive, I'll probably find myself sitting in the theater and checking it out. That's, you know, Pixar's track record. But... two ignores for Inside Out. And speaking of new movies, and speaking of Eye for an Eye, this is a good transition, because 2 weeks ago, me, Matt, and our guest, Jensen Karp, all gave Spy an ignore. We complained that it was probably too much Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
Well, heck, me and Matt got out and caught Spy. Let's find out if we were right or wrong.
When I quit teaching and joined the CIA, I thought I was going to be this amazing spy, and I'm still just the same boring person I was.
You play it too safe.
I just hear my mom's voice. Just blend in, let somebody else win. Making a wave isn't always brave.
Brilliant.
Give up on your dreams, Susan. Just to write that in my lunchbox.
We've intercepted chatter that Rayna Boyanov knows where that nuke is. She knows the identity of all our agents.
We need someone to find the bomb without being detected, but it can't be any of you.
Need someone invisible.
Matt, on the cover, the premise is simple. Melissa McCarthy goes undercover for the CIA, and she's not used to being in the field as a spy, and all hell breaks loose. Now, to some degree, that is what happens. But the good news is, Spy is so much more. For starters, the character McCarthy plays, Susan Cooper, is portrayed much smarter than I had thought going in. I was worried that her character would be a fish out of water, much like we have seen many times before. One example being Mr. Bean and Johnny English. I was so happy this was not the case. While she is clearly not some smooth spy, she does have her rough moments, I'm giving her that. Her character, though, is intelligent, funny, and ultimately confident. In the opening scenes, we meet Susan Cooper, already working at the CIA, behind a desk as an analyst for another spy, the suave Bradley Fine, played by Jude Law. Once something happens to him on his last mission, the CIA must send someone in that will not be recognized. Hence, Susan Cooper is sent to Paris on her first mission in the field. The film actually worked on multiple levels for me, Matt. This is a big summer comedy. Director Paul Feig gives you enough story that I actually found myself caring about the plot. So many comedies fail as they forget the number one rule. Good story, number one. While McCarthy gets plenty of laughs, it must be noted this movie was cast perfectly all the way around. Jason Statham as the over-the-top macho CIA agent, Jude Law as the cool, nothing-can-go-wrong spy, and Rose Byrne as the evil Rayna, who is selling a nuclear bomb. She was awesome. And that's not even mentioning Miranda Hart, who I was not familiar with, as Nancy, another quirky, desk-bound CIA agent that helps Susan in her time of need. The writing, and I'm not speaking just of the story, is perfect. All the funny one-liners, constant laughing in the theater that I was at. When we look back, when the summer is finished, Spy will be one of the highlights. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3 Jaws.
I'll just come right out of the gate and say I agree. 3 Jaws. Melissa McCarthy, hilarious. But I think all the best jokes went to Rose Byrne.
She was awesome.
The thing that surprised me about this movie, well, aside from the fact that I really liked it, which was a big surprise, and I think you're right. The reason this worked is because Melissa McCarthy wasn't playing that fish out of water idiot, you know, like Naked Gun, like I'm I'm stupid, but somehow I bungle through this.
Right. You know? We've seen that so many times, and that's what I thought going in.
That's why the movie worked, because she did have core capabilities that she was just a little bit, she needed to remember, let's say. The thing that surprised me the most, though, was the level of violence in the movie. They did not, this also, you said the movie works on a lot of levels. It works on an action movie level
it
as
does.
Well. I mean, there were some really great, like, fight scenes, choreography, some amazing stunt work, decent special effects. There was a couple of moments when I thought the special effects were a little lame. But for the most part, especially the fighting, was fantastic. And I was truly shocked at one moment of outright gore when I'll just say two characters are having a knife fight. There's a stabbing that penetrates an entire body part. It was pretty shocking because it happened very slowly. And anytime you see a knife penetrate somebody's skin in you know, slow motion, you get queasy. I mean, it doesn't pull any punches in the violence department. I actually thought it was kind of cool. But that's also a warning. So if you're not into the violence, maybe you won't like this, because I think I wasn't.
I wouldn't say it was that violent where someone would be turned off by it.
I think maybe, man.
Really?
Well, I mean, this isn't like super hardcore ultra violent, but it's a violent movie, man. I mean, there's a couple people getting shot in the head at least two or three times. And like I said, mentioned the stabbings. Somebody's throat gets dissolved by some sort of suicide pill gone wrong, and they show it. So you will be surprised by the level of gore, probably going in expecting a silly comedy. So just a fair warning there.
Sure. Now, I mentioned how well casted this was. Did you not agree that everybody that was playing their part, especially let's start with Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Wonderful, was he not?
Absolutely.
I mean,
I
you had to
character.
Laugh at almost every line the guy delivered.
He gets sillier and sillier as the movie goes on. It's hilarious.
Jude Law as the suave spy.
Perfectly
you
cast.
Know, exactly. I mean, it starts out with him.
He's like the James Bond type character.
Right, and McCarthy is sort of in his ear helping him out.
She's like the operator.
Perfect, absolutely. Yeah. And as we mentioned, Rose Byrne as the evil, you know.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, I mean.
Some of the best lines in that movie.
And the chemistry between Rose Byrne and Melissa McCarthy was unbelievable. Like, when I came out of the movie, I thought Rose Byrne and Melissa McCarthy should be making movies together.
I agree.
They were awesome on screen.
They were like Spade and
Farley.
Yeah, Spade and Farley.
They were wonderful. And two, I mentioned that you care a little bit about the plot. Now, I'm not saying this is some like major thinker of a film,
right,
but you get what I'm talking about. For a movie to work where she's a spy and she has to go travel to Paris, to Budapest and such, you need to care a little bit about what's going on in the movie. And I think they gave enough to it so that the whole movie worked as just an entertainment as a whole. You were laughing, but you really did care what happened at the end with the characters, you know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a MacGuffin that's being shuffled around, but for the most part, you do care about the plot. And it's more about the plot as far as what happens to Melissa McCarthy's character. Does she find fulfillment? Does she advance her goals and her life? More so than it's about the actual, like, why they're on this mission. But, another perfectly cast character, speaking of, which is the CIA director. Oh, man, what is that actress's name?
Allison Janney.
Oh, great.
I love it.
And she's you know, sort of like a gruff character, and she pops up perfectly cast.
I have an Allison Janney fetish, I think. Every movie she's in, I'm like, oh, as soon as I saw her name, I did not know she was in this movie, and I was sitting in the theater. The credits came on, and I saw that she was going to be in it. I'm like, I'm going to like this movie. If she's in it, I'm going to have a good time
with
it.
She is good. I like her, too.
Yeah. All around, probably, maybe, the summer's best comedy, from what I can see. I highly recommend going to check this one out. And I think it works with everybody to go see it. You know what I mean? If you brought a date to it, that would be great. If you brought a family to it, you brought your parents and your kids, everybody would have a good laugh with this movie.
Yeah, there's some pretty, like I mentioned, the violence, and there's some pretty, there's some F-bombs dropped here and there, but maybe not the young kids, but your teens for sure, yeah.
Yeah. So we take it back. We gave it 3 ignores. I'm sorry. Spy movie, I'm sorry. Melissa McCarthy, I'm sorry. I know we're trying to get you on CinemaJaws. I hope you're listening to this particular episode.
Yeah, you know what? She found her vehicle, finally. And yes. I think this is going to wind up being a franchise for her. I think it'll at least have one sequel, so
yep,
maybe two.
So 3 Jaws from Rye the Movie Guy.
Giving it 3.
Awesome. 3 Jaws for Matt Kay.
Great comedy.
Wow. It is not a Festival Darling. It is a summer blockbuster, but yeah, our topic is Festival Darlings. So without further ado, we bring in our guest via the telephone out in Los Angeles. He is an actor. He has made an incredible film. He wrote it and starred in it, entitled Sandcastles. He also runs a local film festival called the Riverbend Film Festival. Jordan Hodges, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Thank you, sir.
How are you doing out there in L.A.?
Doing good, man. It's sunny and the weather never changes here. It's good. We're moving right now, finally getting a house. Been living in apartments from Chicago to L.A. for about 8 years now, so finally getting a house. So the apartment's kind of a mess with boxes.
That's funny, because that was my first question. I was going to ask when you moved out there, because you're originally from the Midwest area.
Yep. Yeah, I was born in Goshen, Indiana, you know, right around South Bend there. Mm-hmm. You know, Notre Dame fan. I came to LA, I think 2010. I did about 3 years in Chicago before that, in kind of you know, to get introduced to acting and, you know, filmmaking, and was on a lot of sets. Just kind of, you know, a good stomping grounds before I did the leap out here to LA.
I found a lot of people kind of make that the journey. You know, a lot of successful comedians especially seem to come through Chicago first, do a little stint out here before heading out to LA.
Yeah, with, like, you know, Second City and I.O. and whatnot. I feel like Chicago really has kind of bred, like, almost every big comedian there is.
Yeah, we're proud of it. We love the city.
Yeah, it's there's no better town in the summer than Chicago. I just couldn't do another winter there.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it.
They are rough. So tell us exactly how you got involved in filmmaking. Was this a passion of yours when you were a young kid?
No, actually, I was in college. I was attending school at IUSB in South Bend, and I was a fine arts major because I built, like, websites. I built websites for my small town, and because nobody else was doing it, you know, made good money and whatnot. So I was like, well, what the heck? I'll just become a fine arts major and, like, learn about computer graphics and whatnot. Well, I had to take an acting class. It was like the acting 101 basically just for a credit so I could get my financial aid at the time to be full time. And it was the only thing that was with my schedule that worked. And I would never show up or show up late, you know, coffee in hand. I just thought it was the silliest thing. And my professor made me audition for a local play to pass the class, basically. And, you know, if I did that, I could pass. And I went there, no monologue or anything. And I just kind of told the story to the director, because he was like, well, tell me a story. And I told him something that was, you know, pretty deep and personal and whatnot, and he said anybody can share that with a stranger can act, and he cast me, and I did the run of the play and dropped out at the end of the semester and headed to Chicago.
Wow.
Wow. Caught the bug, huh?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, when you're young, you're, you know, naive and wide-eyed, so it's like I'm just glad it happened when it did. Because a lot of people go their whole life without finding something they truly love to do. And it was just a really great outlet for me. And the whole filmmaking process, I just fell in love with, from every position, all the crew, cast, the storytelling of it.
And speaking of that, it seems like you're most proficient anyways in two of the categories, acting, but also writing. You've have a few writing credits, most notably Sandcastles.
Yeah, with the writing, you know, acting wasn't the first thing, of course. And, you know, I did probably, I don't know, 10 features as an actor. And what was happening is I just wasn't finding really good material. I think, you know, as you do it, the more you do it, like the money or the fame or anything like that, those things don't really matter to you. And it's really just about the story, because, you know, whatever you do on that screen kind of lasts longer than you do.
Sure.
So there's kind of just like an importance to it, and I just couldn't find something that I really wanted to do. And, you know, the chances of you landing a role that's a great story with a big enough role that matters, and, you know, then that film does well. I mean, there's a lot of things that have to happen that are out of your control. So I just took a stab at writing this film about the American dream, kind of, and yeah, and then I produced it also, and I've kind of taken the film from A to Z. We're signing our North America distribution this week, actually. So it's been a long run.
Wow, congratulations. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's, yeah, but movies are like kids. They kind of never leave you, and I didn't realize that when I started it. And here I am 3 years later and still working on it every day.
Yeah, it'll be with you for another three at least, you know? I mean, they get stuck to you.
Yeah.
So, Jordan, you got to work, speaking of sandcastles, with Clint Howard, who I am very fond of from his Eagle Bower days back at Rock and Roll High School. How did that go?
Oh, Clint, man. Clint is just a total pro. The guy has been in Hollywood since he was his whole life. He started acting with his brother Ron on the Andy Griffith Show when he was two. He did a few spots on there as Leon. And that guy has just all he knows is set. He grew up on him. I mean, he's met Walt Disney, you know?
Wow.
And it was kind of like, yeah, I'm a big fan of his too. It was kind of a rite of passage to be able to share a scene with him. And the role is so specific in Sandcastles that we basically wrote it for him. And if he couldn't do it, like, we would either have to scrap the part, rewrite it, figure something else out, because we needed him specifically. He's such a specific character. And we sent him the script, and he signed on, man, and it was awesome.
That's very cool.
That's got to be an awesome feeling when you're sort of hoping to get Clint Howard. You send him the script, and you finally get the phone call that says, yeah, he's on, you know?
Yeah, not only was he just on, he was so about it. It's you know, Clint does a lot of genre pictures, or, you know, he'll pop up in these, you know, things with a lot of Ron's films and stuff. And he just really appreciated Sandcastles was, you know, I think he described in an interview he did for us that we didn't seem like the kind of people who were just, you know, threw something together to try to make a buck, you know, like on a horror film or something. Nothing wrong with those at all. They're smart business-wise. It was just something really different for him, and he just really understood the film, and flew out to Indiana, and he was awesome. And we ended up he flew out to Indiana again at the Riverbend Film Festival last year, not this year, but last year, and we did a Q&A together too, and it's been pretty neat. And we've stayed in contact since then. He's a really great guy.
And what else can you tell us about Sandcastles? Like, give us a little bit of the plot details for the Jawheads.
It takes place in rural Indiana, and I play a character named Noah, and my little sister in the film, Lauren, she gets kidnapped when she's five, and we're both really young, from a beach parking lot, and the family kind of descends into, like, poverty and just really having a hard time, and that's why the film's called Sandcastles, like, kind of the philosophical thing that, you know, one wave can knock it down, but it can always be rebuilt, just different, and it's just fragile as a whole anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she's gone for 10 years, and she gets dropped off randomly in front of a local restaurant, and she's mute. And, you know, the story follows her coming back into the house and trying to relate to her, but at the same time having this cat-and-mouse game of what happened to her. And the character, Randy Spence, who plays my Uncle Tommy, he lives in the basement and is in an ex-cop, and this case was like the case he could never let go, so he's like very obsessed with it.
Sure.
And it kind of all kind of comes down to a showdown.
Nice.
That sounds really cool. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, so I'm excited.
Yeah, it's a heavy film. It's deep. It's got a lot of great characters in it, and, you know, that's really a testament to the crew and, you know, the supporting cast, and it just, things really worked out with it, and it's a really beautiful film. It was shot very well on Flying Two Red Epics on the vintage anamorphic glass by our DP, Chris Felici.
Sweet. And you had mentioned just earlier that you were finalizing your North American distribution rights. What can we expect? Can we see this film sometime this year?
The most likely, you know, once we deliver it, it's kind of in their hands, so anything can happen. But most likely they'll get out of the way of the Halloween and Christmas season this year.
Okay.
And they'll probably release it early next year. My guess is February or March, during kind of like the award season in spring, where people are more prone to watch just kind of drama films, and, you know, before the summer blockbuster and all that.
Sure.
Sounds good. You'll have to let us know when it drops, man. We'll be sure to spread the good word.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Appreciate it.
And something else you're involved with is the Riverbend Film Festival. How long has the Riverbend Film Festival been going on, and when did you take such a big, I guess,
active role?
Yeah.
Been around, used to be the South Bend Media Film Festival, I think. There was a film group back in South Bend, like, that started 15 years ago. Well, that kind of evolved, like, about 8 years ago to the Riverbend Film Festival, and it's a film festival that takes place where I'm from. And, of course, you know, I went to it when I started out and when I still lived around there and checking out films. And kind of a long story short, I did a cameo for the president of the film festival and his feature, just kind of a one-line thing, and we really got along, Tim Richardson. And after we premiered Sandcastles there last year, we got to know each other a little better, and the director of programming, the one before me, dropped out, and they just kind of called me randomly and wanted to know if I was interested in doing it. And it was kind of a thing I couldn't say no to, a film festival that, you know, takes place where I'm from, and to have such an active role. And it's a young film festival, and it's kind of like my 20-year plan, basically. We're really looking forward to growing it.
That's pretty awesome, man.
It's fun because this year was my first year doing it, and I got to watch like 500, 600 films probably.
Yeah. I do a little film. Yeah, I do know. I do a little film festival. It's just a short film fest here in Chicago. It's a one-nighter at a bar. And just that. I mean, we're talking hours, and these aren't even features, just hours of screening films and, you know, trying to find the cream, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work, of course, but when you come across a film that just you really like, it kind of makes it all worth it. And plus, you kind of get connected to a lot of great film people, you know, like you guys and whatnot. And it has a lot of different benefits with it. And I love talking with filmmakers and, you know, putting it on. And we're getting some more city backing coming this year. And things are really looking good for it to grow it over like the next 10 to 20 years. So I'd like to, you know, be there at the ground floor.
Oh, that's awesome. And it should be noted to the Jawheads, as we most of them know, Elias, our engineer, also a filmmaker here in Chicago, had a short film in the River Bend Film Festival. Elias?
Yeah, thank you very much, Jordan, for selecting me. You have a great eye for film.
hey, thanks, man. Your film was pretty funny. So it was clever. And, you know, we had a good lineup this year, so I'm glad that we got you in there.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So what's up next for you? Are you still just full concentration on Sandcastles or any other projects in the works?
Yeah, writing the next script right now. Pretty solid into the third act of it. And from there, we'll develop the pitch packet and see if we can go into production on that. And, of course, I'm talking with different directors and whatnot and attached to various projects that could either go forward or drop at any second.
Sure.
And trying to figure out, you know, which is the next role and if I want to kind of go to the trenches on another feature again.
When is the next film festival?
It will be April of 2016. So we'll start taking submissions here this fall. And, you know, of course, that takes a lot of time working on that, setting that up, because we're actually switching it over from South Bend into Goshen, where I'm actually originally from, because it has that downtown, like, historic atmosphere, and it's just perfect place for a film festival. We got the city to really get behind us on it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Great.
So for the Jawheads listening to this that want to maybe follow you on Twitter or Facebook or find out more information about Sandcastles, where's the best place to do so online?
Facebook, you can like the page, the Sandcastles page for sure, facebook.com/sandcastlesmovie. Or just type Sandcastles in the search. Find me on Facebook, Jordan Hodges, Twitter, @Jordan_Hodges. Or just, you know, quick Google search.
Yeah, that's all you need anymore.
Yeah, how about
just,
it?
Just Google it.
I know it.
Do it, Jawheads. Now, before we wrap up this interview, we like to end these interviews with cinema cues, we call them, sort of silly movie questions to get to know the guest. Elias, you got a couple in the barrel?
Yes, I do. Real quick, it should be noted that you spell his name Jordan, Jordon.
That's right,
for
yeah.
people looking for him.
Yep.
Yeah, if you Google it.
Appreciate that.
All right. I know with my name, I people, geez, even when I shorten it to Eli at like Starbucks or something, people will spell it with E-L-Y or something like that. Anyway.
Yeah. Starbucks.
So, yeah. Let's see. So here's a random question here. Jurassic World is opening this weekend. Let's say you're on a tour of Jurassic Park. Who would you rather see eaten when you stop at the T-Rex exhibit? Nick Cage or John Travolta? Or who would you rather see saved, rather?
Yeah, you can rescue one of them.
I'd rescue Nick Cage, only because he does put out a great film once in a while. You guys see Joe?
I love Joe. That could be almost a festival darling, actually.
Oh, Joe, man. Yeah, what a cool, gritty movie. I was pleasantly surprised by that. I mean, You know, John Travolta, I like a lot of his, you know, his stuff. Like, I remember, you know, Face Off and those old movies. I have sometimes watching him, like, in real life always kind of seems weird.
Yeah.
They're both weird.
They're both weird, but I think he actually made the right call there. If T-Rex is going to eat one of those two, I'd probably want to see him eat Travolta.
It'd be hysterical. Nick Cage is at least funny, you know, like, he doesn't seem to take himself maybe way too serious and it's funny, or he just, I don't know, he knows what he's doing, I feel like.
And plus, Nick Cage would probably have a hilarious reaction that you chose Nick Cage over John Travolta.
Right.
Okay, so on the same trip to Jurassic Park, raptors are eating the last surviving prince of Goonies and Ghostbusters, although you could save one.
Why do people go to this park?
Which one do you save and why?
Which one?
Goonies and Ghostbusters, the last surviving prince of those films. Which one do you grab?
Goonies.
What? I like the answer, but why?
Like, why would I save the Goonies?
Yeah, instead of Ghostbusters.
Just because, you know, the ghosts don't really scare me. And Goonies, I don't know. I admire their adventurous heart.
All right, there we go. And one more. Who would you like to direct the movie about your life?
Ooh, Derek C. France.
I'm not that familiar.
Blue Valentine. Okay. Put Me on the Pine.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Awesome director.
Oh, and real quick, who would play you? Yourself?
Me. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, well, if you got an actor on, of course he's going to play himself.
Stern in Private Parts.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
No doubt. So Jordan is going to be hanging out with us for the rest of the jaw. He has his picks for Festival Darlings. That is our topic this week, Mitt.
Yeah.
And we're doing it for two reasons. One, Jordan runs the Riverbend Film Festival. Two, talk about a festival darling opening up. Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which I reviewed on the very last episode, episode number 239.
Very excited.
Is out in theaters and is another festival darling. And I am excited about this topic, Matt, because there is no way you can have a Marvel film on this list.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, every once in a while, we got to do a topic for you, Rye. This is for you.
All right. Well, because it's for me, you'll get a start at this week,
Matt. This is for Team Rye.
We are doing a top three Festival Darlings.
All right.
What do you got sitting at number three, buddy?
I feel like all three of my films are ones that I've talked about before, but not for a long, long time. This came out in 2003, and I believe it did win the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance. It went on to perform extremely well and make the name Harvey Pekar a household name, American Splendor. Paul Giamatti. I really enjoy how they mixed documentary style with a narrative, you know, sort of fictionalized account of what actually happened. And there was actors alongside their real-life counterparts, which is really, I don't think, been done, at least not done that well before.
I couldn't agree more. And doing something like that's a tricky thing to pull off.
Yeah.
But boy, did that film nail it.
Yeah, and obviously Paul Giamatti's a fantastic actor. So,
I just watched John Adams. Have you guys seen that?
I have.
Yeah, I didn't care for it. What'd you think?
You watched the whole series?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I knew
Matt
Paul
didn't
Giamatti
watch it.
Was phenomenal.
He was, and it was very interesting just learning about John Adams and the everything, you know.
I thought it was about Sam Adams, the beer. It's like, oh, this is a movie about beer.
Oh, no wonder you were
Sam
let down.
Sam did it, isn't he?
Sam Adams, I think they do mention him maybe in episode one or two, I think. Yeah. It's a wonderful series to learn more about the Founding Fathers, I thought. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So
they should have, you know, watched it in school or something.
I agree. So it swings us over to Jordan, your number three. What do you got sitting there?
Mine is a new one that's actually not yet released, but I was at the premiere at Sundance this year of it, and it would be Last Days in the Desert with Ian McGregor, who plays Jesus Christ in an imagined tale during, like, the 40 days and 40 nights. While he's in the desert, and there's only about three characters in the whole film, and it's just so beautifully done. It's the DP's Emmanuel Lubezki, you know, who DP's, you know, Terrence Malick's work, and he just DP'd Birdman, and it was kind of one of those new ones that it really moved me at the premiere this year.
And what was the name of it again?
Last Days in the Desert.
Awesome. I love Ethan Hawke. He does some good work, doesn't he?
No, Ewan McGregor.
Oh, Ewan McGregor. For some reason, I thought I was thinking Ethan Hawke. Oh, Ewan McGregor, also excellent actor.
Oh, he's Obi-Wan Kenobi, for God's sake.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do you know when that one's coming out, wide release? Or?
No, I don't know, man. These festival films, sometimes they just come out like, you know, 6 months later, sometimes 2 years.
Yeah, it really depends what kind of momentum they get at these festivals. That's what's really interesting about it, you know?
Yeah.
And that swings us over to my number three. And at number three, I have a film came out in 2007. This is one that hit Sundance and then just got thrust right into the spotlight. And I remember someone telling me, you have to go see it. It's the best musical that's come out in 10 years. And, of course, they were speaking of the movie Once.
Mm.
And, again, now I don't think of it so much as a festival darling because I love the film so much. It almost transcends that. I don't even think of it as a small movie, but this thing was shot for something like $300,000 on a couple of Steadicams.
Yeah.
And over, I think the course is something like 17 days over in Ireland. And they bring it to this festival. It's wonderful, and it just gets all this momentum going. Next thing you know, they win Oscars for the two leads for song, which was Glenn Hansard and Maria Iraglova. They both win Oscars. The film celebrated, and everybody loves it now. So,
well done on those names, by the way, Brian.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. That is a good pick. Good pick.
All right, we're into our twos. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
At number two, and by the way, we're still in Sundance land here. That's totally by accident, but this premiered at the 2004 Sundance, unless I'm mistaken, also a Grand Jury Prize winner, time travel film by Shane Carruth, Primer.
Mm, yeah.
Probably the smartest time travel movie, period. I don't think there's another one that is quite as ambitious, and it's a bit of a mind bender, too. I mean, it's got that Memento feeling, like the events are out of order. Anytime you throw time travel into the mix, it can become such a crappy plot device that really unravels a story. But Shane, who wrote it, directed it, produced it. He also
started.
He also wrote the music.
Yeah.
His sound mix, everything.
Yeah, the guy's a true auteur. And this is, I think, the first movie that introduced me to his work. I've since seen Upstream Color and some of his other stuff. But this guy's great. And Primer is amazing. I don't think enough people have seen it. It's on Netflix, so check it out. That's my number two.
Sweet. Jordan, can you top Primer? What do you got sitting at number two?
Oh, I'm going to have to say Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah, it's such a magical film, but it feels so independent in a lot of ways, too. I've never seen the Louisiana Bayou shot with such beauty. And I don't know, when you kind of have this like heartfelt drama and you throw like fantasy and magic in there, it's really easy to make that weird or just to come off bad. And I just, it's just a film that I really love.
And this is a film that I think really captures what we're looking for here when we're speaking about festival darlings. It's a unique film that would have a difficult time finding an audience if it wasn't for the fact that it catches a wave of momentum and everybody starts sort of buzzing about it, correct?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, good pick at number two. And my number two is a film that it really snuck up on me, and it's sort of a quiet film, I guess. Came out in 2011, stars none other than one of Elias's favorites, Elizabeth Olsen. Okay. Of course, I'm speaking of Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Mm.
And this is the movie where Elizabeth Olsen plays a character that just came out of a cult, and the opening scene is her making a phone call to her sister, played by Sarah Paulson, and to come pick her up, and she had been missing for all this time. And it's that sort of creepy feeling the entire movie that she cannot let go of the cult, and she thinks that they're coming after her. And you almost start to see that she's blending reality with her fantasy visions that these cult people are coming, and maybe they really are. You don't know. John Hawks plays a wonderful creep as the leader of the cult.
He's a man.
That guy is just the best. Everything he's in, he just knocks it out of the park. Creepy movie, really, really strong film. Elizabeth Olsen's really debut as well, so I loved it.
Good pick.
That was my number two, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
I got to catch up with that movie. I still haven't seen it.
We are into our number ones. Your favorite festival darling, Matthew.
All right. My favorite festival darling is a documentary. And I think this is the first one. Well, it introduced us to Michael Moore. And before this movie, documentaries were really just like talking heads on the screen, and he introduced a style that was almost like the documentary as a blockbuster. I think it was a style he'd go on to perfect with his later movies, but Roger and Me is the pick. I mean, what year was it? 89. Wow. Jesus. This movie's really old. It's about General Motors leaving Flint, Michigan, and basically ruining the town. I mean, it's a very old film. I'm sure we've all seen it. And, you know, anybody who's a fan of documentaries, this should be high on your list. So that's my pick. Number one.
Wow. Number one. You do love your documentaries.
I do. I do.
What an ass. All right.
You don't like docs?
No, I do like docs. It's just you love to talk about it. I love docs.
I think me and Charles Klein are going to do a documentary film festival.
Oh, wow.
Here we go.
That'll be short-lived.
Well, it'll be short docs.
I'm going to make a documentary about how short-lived it is.
You should. You should.
I'll help film it.
Yeah, it'll be about three frames.
We'll show it at the first fest.
All right. We're swinging over to Jordan. Jordan, what do you got number one at Festival Darlings?
Man, I'm going to have to say, it's a tough one, but I'm going to swing it back to John Hawks, Man in Winter's Bone.
That's a great pick also.
I just, man, that film really kind of inspired me to make, you know, feel like I could, I guess, make a film myself and be okay at it. Just because, like, they shot with a low budget, but it was just so much about the story and the characters. And, you know, being from, you know, small town Indiana in that Midwest is, you know, something about that film seems strangely foreign, but strangely familiar, too. And it's just a really relatable picture.
Yeah, it was interesting, too, because we don't see that sort of rural area in America on film quite captured the way they did in Winter's Bone, you know?
Yeah, well, the last film that did it great is Out of the Furnace. Have you guys seen that?
Yes, with Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's also really, really well done. Sort of like the hills of Virginia or wherever they were at in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love Sam Shepard, anything he does.
And it's amazing, too, I think, the success story of Winter's Bone being, look at how big of a star Jennifer Lawrence is, maybe one of the biggest right now in Hollywood. And it was really a 1-2 punch. It was obviously her performance in Winter's Bone that gets her first Oscar nomination. And then it's the way she shows up at the Oscars. She was all the buzz that year. And then next thing you know, she lands the Hunger Games and so forth from that, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
The rest
crazy.
Is history.
Yep. Silver linings.
Yep.
Yep.
Wow, that's a great pick at number one. And at mine, I tried to, I really dug deep, Matt. I dug deep.
Yeah.
Because I thought, you know what, let me pick one that I really love, I have not talked about on the show. And I went through old film journals that I had, and I came across one in 2003. All right.
Okay.
And,
wow, that's digging deep, Ry.
All right, 2003. And this one stars none other than Peter Dinklage. You know this the little man from?
Yes, yes.
Tyrion Lannister.
Tyrion Lannister himself.
All right.
Yeah. The Imp.
I am speaking of the 2003 film, The Station Agent.
You're right. I don't think you have ever talked about it.
Anybody familiar with this one? Have you seen this one by chance, Jordan?
No. I'm familiar with what film you're talking about.
Yeah.
Though I need to watch that.
Okay.
Is that good?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's written and directed by Thomas McCarthy. He's also now went on to did the movie, the wrestling movie with Paul Giamatti, Win-Win, and he also did The Visitor. It stars, like I mentioned, Peter Dinklage, but also Patricia Clarkson. Dinklage plays Finn, obviously a dwarf, and at the time the movie opens, he works at a model train hobby shop, and the shop's older is like an elder guy named Henry, and he passes away, and so the shop closes, and Finn, little old Finn, has this like love for trains, and what he finds out is he's crushed that the shop is closing, but the shop's owner actually left him a lot of land that actually has an old train depot right on the tracks out in like this rural area. And so he decides to go live in this little train house. And
it's
such a unique film. So he goes in there and he ends up meeting friends all in this town. This guy, Joe, who runs like a refreshment stand for when people get off the trains. And then this artist who had lost like a young son, played by Patricia Clarkson. And she's trying to get over her loss. And the three of them just form this wonderful friendship between the three of them. And it's not, you know, no big revenge thriller. It's really, you know, a personal film. You know, you really feel the characters. They feel real. And as I was going through this, I had a note in there that I watched this because Ebert saw this at Sundance, and Ebert went on to write this, and I quote, "This is a comedy, but it's also sad. And finally, It's a simple story about trying to figure out what you love to do and then trying to figure out how to do it. It is a great relief that The Station Agent is not one of those movies in which the problem is that the characters have not slept with each other and the solution is that they do. It's more about the enormous, unrealized fears and angers that throb beneath the surface of their lives. Hmm. Ebert, boy, that guy could capture it.
He could.
Yeah.
And it's definitely one of those movies when you see it, it sticks with you. It's like, wow, what a unique film. And it's such a festival darling in the sense that you couldn't just release it and hope people found it because people would not know what to make of it.
Yeah.
You had to catch the momentum of Sundance for people to start talking about it and people start putting it in their queues and looking for it.
2003, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
You know if that's on Netflix or another stream?
Throw it in the job box. Elias will look that up at break. Is The Station Agent on Netflix or the easiest way to get it? Awesome. Any honorable mentions for you guys?
You got any, Jordan?
No. I mean, there's a lot of great films, man.
There are. I just wrote down a couple. Brick.
Yeah, Brick's a good one.
Oh, right. That's
yeah.
Good.
Before Sunrise, think about, now we got this enormous series, you know, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight, but it all started with a very small film with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, In a World, about the voiceover actors.
Yeah.
Love that one. Man on a Wire, talk about a documentary.
Yeah,
that one came out of Sundance. And the last that I wanted to mention was Precious, which ended up being obviously nominated for Academy Awards, but started its little life out there in Utah.
Broke huge.
So that was our mention of Festival Darlings. And if we missed...
Oh, real quick. You did miss one.
Oh, yeah.
Clerks.
Elias.
Clerks gave us Kevin Smith, one of my favorite podcasters.
Well done. Yes.
Not
so
much my favorite movie maker, but... Definitely.
I mean, remember, you used to be able to go back and say he is one of my favorite movie makers, but not anymore.
Well, he did make Tusk. I mean, you really liked it.
Oh, he did not like Tusk. He just says that because he's a fan of the podcast.
Yeah. Well, we had to give a shout out to him.
Nice. But if we did miss your favorite festival, darling, and you have Twitter pulled up, Jawheads, please shoot us a tweet. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. What we're going to do is take a quick break, and we come back. We have a cinema war looking at... Is Cameron Crowe's career done? And also, trivia, Matt Kay versus Jordan in Pixar movie trivia.
Ooh.
We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. Robert Redford did not found the Sundance Film Festival as widely believed. In 1978, the Utah Film Commission started an event called the Utah/United States Film Festival and held it in Salt Lake City. After a few unpopular years, the event was moved to Park City in 1981. In that year, Robert Redford founded the Sundance Institute, and finally, in 1991, the Utah/United States Film Festival officially became known as the Sundance Film Festival. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
Operation plays rock and roll music. You can find us on the e-sites of iTunes, MediaNet, Rhapsody, Nokia, Amazon, Google, Deezer, Aspiro, Vervet, Omniphone, RDIO, and Cricket Communications. Seek us out today.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Jordan Hodges. Jordan, one other question about the Riverbend Film Festival that we weren't clear, because I know Elias had a short film in there. Is it mainly a film festival for just shorts, or are there also feature-length films in there?
We take all feature-length. It's just this year, with a three-day schedule, we had such an overwhelming of good shorts that we decided to drop a lot of the feature slots. We did have about three features this year. Next year will probably be more. Yeah, definitely both, but of course you can just squeeze more short films in that time frame.
Cool. Awesome. And for the Jawheads that want to know more about the film festival, is there a website set up for the Riverbend Film Fest?
Yeah, riverbendfilmfest.org.
Awesome. Do it, Jawheads.
Yeah, check it out.
Perfect. Matt, before we get to Cinema War and before we get to trivia, we did throw one item into the jaw box.
Oh, yeah.
And Eliza's already been out and talking, but it's what,
like,
the heck?
We've made it out of screen now.
I know.
It's a screen jaw box.
Heck, let's open up that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Oh, what's in the box?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for the screens. Honestly, it keeps the mosquitoes out, so this is really good. Let's see. So the question was, is Station Agent on Netflix? Yes, it is. And Amazon Prime. So watch it, Jawheads.
Wow. Stream it anywhere. Amazon or Netflix. That's nice.
Nice. Yeah, perfect. I might even watch it tonight.
That was your Q-tip of the show.
Perfect.
All right. That it?
Yep. That's about it.
Jump back in that jawbox.
All right,
Matt. It brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest this week, Jordan Hodges, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won this cinema war. It's important because me and Matt are fighting for 20 seconds of jaw time, rant or rave on whatever we want. Boy, Aloha came out and it flopped. I think Cameron Crowe's done. Heck, Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's cinema war topic is.
Today's cinema war topic: does director Cameron Crowe have anything left in his tank, or is he finished? Matt, you'll be fighting for yes, he still can make great films. Rye, you'll be fighting his tank is empty and he is finished. Let the cinema war begin.
Does Cameron Crowe still have bullets in his gun, Rye? Well, let me ask you this. Do you feel lucky? Cameron has written and or directed some of my and your favorite films. Vanilla Sky, anyone? You better call tech support, Ryan.
Huh. Matt, you better show me your money, because it is going to be tough to prove that Cameron Crowe has anything left in his tank. With Aloha flopping, that brings his flop streak to 3. His two films before this were We Bought a Zoo and Elizabethtown. Phew!
You know, while it's true that Crowe has yet to find firm footing in this decade, he seems to speak for a generation.
Decade?
He seems to speak for a generation in almost every other. Fast Times at Ridgemont High was for the 70s, Say Anything in the 80s, Singles in the 90s, Almost Famous in the aughts, with good ones, good films in between those as well. It's not an if, it's a when.
No way, man. And a major problem with Crowe is that he takes about 4 to 5 years in between films. If you have 3 flops in a row, such as Crowe, you need to get something out soon to reprove yourself. His last good film was one that you mentioned, Matt, Vanilla Sky.
That wasn't his last good one.
Yes, it was. That came out in 2001. Come on.
All right. Well, you know what? You can say anything about Cameron Crowe. The guy began his career in his early teens by sending articles to Rolling Stone, and they were accepted. To be writing that well at such an early age is amazing, and he's shown us in the decades since that he can continue the pace. He's got a couple of duds, but can you really sit there and tell me he's done?
Yes, I can, and I'm telling you, he's done. Crowe's batting average, Matt, is not good, considering he only has 8 films in his directing filmography. 2 are great ones, 3 decent, and 3 flops. And the 3 flops came as his last 3 films. What out of that gives you the idea that he has something left to give? Count to 3, buddy. He's finished.
All right. I'm about to show you the money. Crowe has an eye for talent, having helped launch the careers of some previously unknown actors like Jennifer Jason Leigh, Eric Stoltz, Judge Reinhold, Phoebe Cates, Anthony Edwards, future Oscar winners like Nick Cage, Forrest Whitaker, Sean Penn, and that's just from Ridgemont High. The list goes on, and it's going to continue. He knows who to work with. Everyone gets a mulligan, and Cameron Crowe gets 2, maybe 3.
Ah, Matt, Cameron Crowe is no golden god. His next project is a made-for-TV movie entitled Roadies. He did have promise after Almost Famous and Maguire, but his last 15 years of work have given us nothing but lowlights, including Orlando Bloom driving aimlessly around Kentucky, Matt Damon petting a giraffe, and the lowest of lows.
You love it when Matt Damon pets his giraffe.
The lowest of lows, Matt, Emma Stone playing someone of Hawaiian descent. Crowe's time to shine is finished. There's nothing left in his tank. Whew. We are button heads here on Cinema War, as we always do. We throw it to our guest, our jury this week. Jordan, what'd you think of this Cinema War?
Well, you both make valid points. You know, and it's I got mixed feelings about it. You know, just you're both right. I'm gonna have to side with Matt.
Cameron
Crowe isn't done yet. You know, I didn't think We Bought a Zoo was a bad film. Wasn't his greatest, but you know, that was 2011. I mean, and this is a guy, you know, gave us Jerry Maguire and, you know, a lot of other great films. And I think, you know, when you get this far in the game, you know, who knows what the studio shoves down your throat and, you know, what kind of rules and that you're kind of confined by. You know, with the casting of Emma Stone, like you mentioned, who, you know, the studio might have just tossed that down there for marketing purposes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You didn't have much of a say about it. I hope we see something more from him. I think when he's on, and when he's off, he's off.
For sure.
I agree with that. Matt, you won the cinema war.
Yeah.
It earns you 20 seconds to rant and rave on whatever you want. Hit it.
All right. You know what? I've come to realize something about myself lately. I really do like documentaries. As much as I love the great Marvel shoot 'em up explosion movies, I can enjoy sitting down with the nice glass of Chianti and watching a documentary. I think I'm getting old, Ryan. Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's what it means.
All right. All right. Well, I'm getting old, folks. That's my 20 seconds.
All right. He's getting old, but not wiser.
Well, I am, because I'm watching more documentaries.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. It brings us to trivia, everyone's favorite final segment of CinemaJaw. It works like this. Jordan, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals. If the person doesn't know it, you'll get a shot at the question. And if you get hung up on any question, our engineer, Elias Rodriguez, has clues to all the questions. You get one trip to the ER. So do you want to go first, Jordan?
No, Matt, go first.
All right.
All right.
It is Pixar movie trivia.
Okay.
In honor of Inside Out opening up in theaters. Matt, question number one. I should have mentioned, Jordan, the first two questions are a little bit easier than the rest. Here we go. Question number one. Who voiced Buzz Lightyear in the Toy Story films?
That was Tim the Tool Man Allen. High as a kite on cocaine.
Question number two, over to Jordan. We all know Toy Story was the first Pixar film, but what was the name of their second film that came out in 1998?
Ooh. What was that talk about, an ER trip?
Do you want to use it on question number two?
Yeah.
Holy cow. A trip to the ER on question number two. Elias Rodriguez, what was the name of that Pixar 1998 film?
A clue is Ants Come Out Around the Same Time. Came out around.
Yeah, the movie Ants came out around the same time.
Oh, Bugs Life?
1-1. Jordan ties it up. Question number three. Good clue, Elias.
Thank you. Question
number three over to Matt Kay. Matt, name the Pixar film that featured voices by Owen Wilson, Paul Newman, and Bonnie Hunt.
Owen Wilson, Paul Newman, and Bonnie Hunt. Jawheads, if you can hear cheering out there, it's because the Hawks are winning the NHL Stanley Cup Finals here, or at least game three? Game four already. Wow. That would be Cars.
2-1, everybody's perfect. Question four, back over to Jordan. In Finding Nemo, we all remember Ellen was in the movie voicing a character, but what was the name of Ellen DeGeneres' character?
Was it Dory?
Wow. Still everybody perfect. Everybody loves their Pixar movies.
We do, yeah.
2-2. We
it's
got
funny that you couldn't remember that question because Dory was amnesiac.
Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. All right, it is 2-2. Question five over to you, Matt. We all know Greg T. Nelson voiced the father in The Incredibles, but what actress voiced Elastigirl, Bob's wife?
That would be Holly Hunter.
I am stunned.
Wow,
I am absolutely stunned. I had no idea Matt would know that one. It is 3-2.
See, I could still surprise you.
I don't even want to say stunned. I'm flabbergasted. I didn't even know you knew who Holly Hunter
was. Hey, it's a superhero movie, Brian. Come on.
Wow. All right, it's 3-2. Come on, Jordan. Question six is over to you. Pixar's Up the movie Up became only the second animated film to be nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. Name the first animated film. This was nominated for Best Picture. There's only been two. Up and what other film?
Wall-E.
Incorrect, Matt. Okay. You got a chance for a steal and to blow it wide open.
And now, okay, I think it is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Oh.
Incorrect. Should have used your ER. We were looking for Beauty and the Beast.
Really?
Beauty and the Beast. Yeah.
I say boo on that.
It is still 3-2, Matt K. Question 7 is over to him. Matt, Ratatouille had many famous voices in it, but what Hollywood legend voiced the restaurant critic Anton Ego?
I must admit, that is one I have not seen. I need to catch up with that one, so I would like a trip to the ER, please.
Whoa! Question number 7. Elias Rodriguez, who voiced restaurant critic Anton Ego in Ratatouille?
Your clue is, starred in a David Lean film that took place in a desert.
Hollywood legend. David Lean in the desert. Is it... is it Kirk Douglas?
Wow, wow. He slipped up. Jordan, you got a chance for a steal here and to tie it back up.
Ooh.
Hollywood legend starred in a David Lean film that came out that, I should say, took place in a desert. He has since passed away.
Oh. Oh. Paul Newman?
Lawrence Olivier?
It was. We were looking for Peter O'Toole, who starred as
Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence of Arabia. Yeah. Wow. Man, oh man. It is still 3-2. And
Jeez, Ryan, how do you get to Lawrence of Arabia from Pixar movies?
I tell you, it's 3-2, Matt K. And the last question is over to Jordan. He can tie it up and force a jawbreaker. Jordan, Sigourney Weaver has lent her voice to only one Pixar movie in a very appropriate role. What movie was it in?
Monsters University.
Oh, Matt, you got a chance for a steal. You have won this ball game, but you can take a guess.
Let's see here. All right, the process of elimination. It's I'll say Wall-E.
That is correct.
It's in outer space, right? So
she voiced the computer. So she's sort of like that sci-fi outer space person, sure. You know, so she was the voice of the computer in Wall-E. Matt wins this one 4-2. Jordan, we do have jawbreakers in case it came down to a
virtual,
tie.
Virtual handshake first. My hat is off to you, sir. Well done, Jordan.
nicely done.
Jordan, this question would have been over to you on the jawbreaker. Toy Story 4, is supposedly coming out. Good idea, or should they have left the series alone?
Ooh, Toy Story 3 was pretty solid, man. I think that was the first animated film I ever cried in. So, you know, I'm all about more Toy Story, but it better be better, or it better be really, really good. And that goes for the next Bourne film too.
That's the right answer.
I agree. Here was the real jawbreaker. Age of Ellen DeGeneres, closest to Matt. You got a guess?
Ellen, huh?
Ellen.
She's not that old. She can still cut a rug. I would say
What are you talking about?
Hey, I said cut a rug.
Oh, all right.
She likes to dance, Ryan.
All right.
She's got to be, let's see. I think she's probably approaching 50. I'd say 46 years old. 46.
Elias Locke met in at an embarrassing 46. Jordan,
too,
you got to guess?
Too young.
I'm going to say 42.
Wow. I got to check my notes again here. She's 57. 57.
What?
Yeah, throw that in the jaw box really quick. We'll get an answer before we blow out of here. She is 57 years old.
Oh, maybe she is. She looks great. I mean,
wow. Yeah. Holy cow. You guys made me rethink. I wrote this yesterday, so yeah, unbelievable.
Well, I guess she was in her like early 30s, late 30s in the 90s. So
she is 57.
57.
57.
Yeah, wow. Unbelievable.
I believe that's how many ingredients are in the Heinz ketchup bottle. Right?
Good stuff. Who knows?
That's a fun fact for you guys.
Hey, first and foremost, before we blow out of here, we got to thank our guest, Jordan Hodges, thanks for coming on Cinema Jaw.
Hey, thank you guys. It's been a lot of fun.
And we also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to all the sponsors, and thanks to the New 400.
No doubt. There is no better theater in Chicago. Check out what's playing at their website at thenew400.com. And we also have to thank our engineer, the best in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Hey, guys. Thank you. You know what? I actually realized I am in 4 film fests this coming week, so I'm just going to rifle them off because I'm actually going to a couple.
Oh, you're a festival darling.
Thank you, Matt. So Saturday the 13th, I will be the Eastern North Carolina Film Festival with my film The Meisner Epiphany. I believe that's in Pitt, North Carolina. Let's see. And Sunday, the next day, I will be back in Chicago at Matt's Indie Incubator. Here, come hang out with us too in Chicago
at the Original Mothers.
Yes, we'll be screening my short Tinder in Real Life, and then Tuesday the 16th, I'm going down to Austin, Texas for the Austin Comedy Film Fest at the Alamo Draft House, which I'm excited about.
Oh, sweet! Love
come
those.
On down, let's have a drink inside the theater. Tinder in Real Life is also playing there, and Thursday the 18th in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Blue Whale Comedy Film Fest. We'll be playing my short. I won't be there, but they actually have some awesome stand-ups there, like Michael Ian Black and a couple other people. So check them out, and hope to see you in their Jawheads.
That's awesome, man.
It is. Yeah. Isn't it great?
Yeah. What? So if you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you can catch one of Elias'
exactly.
movies.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love it. We're going to say we knew him when, Matt.
Yeah, we are.
You know?
Thank you.
So until next week, guys, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies. We'll be right back.